Welcome to the Chest Pulse. I'm Dr. Kelly Pennington, and joining me today to discuss newly available adult vaccines to prevent infection due to respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is Dr. Ryan Maves. Dr. Maves is a professor of medicine and anesthesiology at the Wake Forest University School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Dr. Maves is medical director of the Transplant Infectious Disease Program at Wake Forest and has participated in vaccine research and development for influenza, dengue, COVID-19, and diarrheal disease throughout his career. Welcome, Dr. Maves.
Thank you, Dr. Pennington. It's always great to see you, and thank you for the chance to be here with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for coming on to our podcast. We'll just start with our first question here. So what are some of the unique features of RSV as a cause of adult respiratory infections?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there isn't anything intrinsically unique about RSV after all. It's a fairly typical respiratory virus in a lot of ways. It's an orthopneumovirus, and this is part of a large family of related viruses. It also includes parainfluenza, mumps, measles, and human metapneumovirus. And, you know, and of that group, we've had effective live virus vaccines against measles and mumps for decades. So now what we call RSV today, it's an interesting story. It's originally identified in the 1950s as a cause of respiratory disease in, of all things, a group of chimpanzees who are part of a primate colony. So there are these older papers, as a result, they refer to it as the chimpanzee coryza agent. It was in 1960 that it was ultimately linked to human infections, specifically bronchiolitis in children. And I think when most people think about RSV, that's the thing they're thinking about, is bronchiolitis in kids. But you know, with the advent in the last decade or so of widespread PCR-based testing for respiratory viruses, we've really come to learn just how major a cause of disease RSV can be in adults. You know, unlike many other respiratory viruses, like COVID, for example, RSV infections are almost always symptomatic, you know, more than 95% of them. And about 40% of the cases of RSV that lead to a lower respiratory tract infection, to a pneumonia, are going to have co-infections on top of it. About half of them are going to be like another virus. Another half will be bacterial superinfection. And we don't have a good way to distinguish between those. We've learned that RSV is a major cause of acute COPD exacerbations. And you know, there's this interesting association between RSV and cardiovascular disease, that about half or more of adults who are admitted to the hospital with RSV have concomitant cardiovascular disease. That's a higher incidence than you see than with, say, other respiratory viruses. And there's this kind of odd epidemiologic association between RSV infection and heart failure exacerbations. You know, the mechanism for that isn't entirely clear, but it's a pretty clear signal in the literature. Though it does have some interesting characteristics.
Oh, I think you're right. I think most of us definitely think about RSV as bronchiolitis in children. You've illustrated some highlights here of how it can affect our adult population. But what do you think really is the impact of RSV in adults?
Yeah, you know, globally, our data are going to be limited because we only have really good data from high-income countries. If you look at, you know, North America, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, you'll see that there's about 5 million adult infections per year and 500,000 hospitalizations per year for RSV in adults. And of them, there's about 33,000 deaths. Now, there's 33,000 influenza deaths in the U.S. during a normal year, right? So the mortality burden is not as high as it is for influenza. But still, those are real numbers. And this is, of course, in addition to a likely much larger and incompletely measured burden in low and middle income countries. So the impact on public health is definitely significant, not just in death, but in numbers of hospitalizations, in impact on work hours, on economic burden, and burden on families to care for sick relatives and so forth. Now, the mechanism of how RSV causes pulmonary disease is actually kind of distinctive among respiratory viruses. I know I said there wasn't much unique about it. There actually kind of is some unique stuff. So many of our colleagues are going to recall that cell-mediated immune responses by T cells, by T lymphocytes, can be divided into TH1 and TH2 responses, right? So TH1 responses are our classic kind of antiviral, antifungal pathways and govern a lot of how we respond to viral infections. This is also the pathway that's impacted by, like, HIV infection, for example. So RSV, interestingly, produces a strong TH2 response, so more of our asthma and atopic disease inflammatory pathway, in addition to a TH1 response. And what that leads to is eosinophil production, increased goblet cell mucus production, other features that explain some of this wheezing and bronchiolitis we see in kids and this association with COPD exacerbations in adults. That's kind of a unique feature, this eosinophilic inflammation, which isn't a typical virus thing to cause.
Wow, that's very interesting. I mean, RSV, it sounds like, has been known to be an important cause of respiratory disease in patients for many years. Why is it that we're just now getting effective vaccines against this, what seems to be fairly common infection?
Yeah, you know, there have actually been prior attempts, right? People have been trying to make an RSV vaccine for decades. So, you know, we recall that RSV is related to mumps and measles. And of course, those two have had highly effective live virus vaccines for many years, which is why mumps and measles are vanishingly rare in North America, Western Europe, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, et cetera. Live virus vaccines are also out there for other respiratory viruses, but they're not super common. The one exception would be the nasal influenza vaccine, which some years we use more often than others, but most other respiratory viral vaccines are not live viruses. So there was an early attempt at RSV vaccine development. Those were unfortunately pretty unsuccessful. So in the 1960s, there was this trial of a formalin inactivated vaccine in young children. So formalin is a fairly old-fashioned way to inactivate viruses for vaccine development. This trial had a lot of, we'll just say, ethical issues that would preclude us from conducting it today, thankfully, including the fact that it was tested mostly on young children living in group homes under state custody. So obviously issues of consent. But what this study showed, and this is really what set RSV vaccine development back, the study showed was a paradoxical worsening in disease severity among vaccinated children. Because, you know, there's always going to be a certain degree of breakthrough infections, right? When children got RSV following vaccination, 69% of them would progress to pneumonia, whereas only 9% of the unvaccinated children who got RSV got pneumonia. So this was a fairly dramatic worsening. And this sort of paradoxical worsening is seen in other infections. Like, that's what happens with dengue, right? Like, the second time you get dengue, you have this antibody-mediated enhancement of infection, or people get much sicker. It looks like something similar happened here with these children. So this and some other kind of related failures really delayed the development of further RSV vaccines.
Well, interesting. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Chest Pulse. I'm Dr. Kelly Pennington, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Ryan Mabes about RSV vaccines for adults. So, Dr. Mabes, where are we now with RSV vaccines, and what's changed?
Yeah, you know, so we've had, obviously, since the 1960s, a lot of advances in our understanding of the molecular biology of how viruses work on the cellular level. So this fusion protein, or the F protein of RSV, was identified as one of the key epitopes targeted by our immune system. So the F protein undergoes a lot of conformational changes when it binds to a human cell. But before it undergoes those conformational changes, or when it's called the pre-fusion protein, that's very stable. You know, there's two major subtypes of RSV, A and B, and that pre-fusion protein is highly conserved between those two. So recombinant vaccines targeting the pre-fusion protein have been developed, gone through human clinical trials, phase three trials, and those are now FDA approved. So there are two vaccines that are coming out like this fall, of 2023, for people who are listening to this in the future. So one of them is an adjuvanted vaccine. This is manufactured by GSK. So this vaccine was tested in older adults, 60 years of age and up, and showed an 82.6% reduction in RSV lower respiratory tract infection, so basically pneumonia, and 94.1% reduction in severe disease. And that's very impressive, right? That, and severe disease basically being defined as illness leading to hospitalization. So this vaccine, interestingly, uses the same adjuvant as the recombinant zoster vaccine, which is marketed as Shingrix. So it has a pretty high rate of self-limited, but often unpleasant systemic side effects like myalgia and occasionally fever, but this does go away. This goes away pretty rapidly. And you get, again, this very impressive reduction in severe disease. There is a non-adjuvanted vaccine, which is also, in this case, a bivalent vaccine against the A and B subtypes. This is manufactured by Pfizer. Isn't quite as active as the GSK vaccine in terms of its reduction of all lower respiratory tract infections. It's about 67% as compared to 82.6%. But it is still 85.7% effective at reducing the risk of severe infection. So still very impressive. There are fewer side effects, but at the cost of slightly less activity. Okay. Both vaccines are highly effective. They are largely interchangeable in terms of what we do at the bedside. CDC has recommended these vaccines for adults 60 years of age and older through what they call a shared decision-making paradigm, appreciating that perhaps not every 60-year-old's risk of RSV is the same as in others, but certainly with people with underlying pulmonary, cardiac, renal, or immunologic disorders, like people being treated for cancer, people with transplant, like Dr. Pennington, I care for, these folks should be strongly encouraged to get the vaccines. And I think in this age of, you know, rising recalcitrance to vaccination in certain quarters of our society, you know, one consistent finding is that people trust their individual doctors and other clinicians, people they know, people they have a relationship with, more than they're likely to trust an external authority. And this is really where internists, family physicians, ID doctors, and pulmonologists can make a really big impact. So I encourage all of us to have these conversations with our patients who are at risk.
Yeah, that's a really great point that you highlighted. You know, as we're counseling our patients and thinking about this vaccination, what are some of the unknowns about this vaccine and some future directions that you foresee this going?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two big gaps regarding adult RSV vaccination that I see are first, you know, we don't really have a lot of data about younger patients at risk. I'm thinking about younger folks with diabetes, with coronary disease, with asthma, people under the age of 60 who may benefit based on their comorbidities, but really were not included in the clinical trials and aren't currently included in the vaccine recommendations. And I think identifying folks like that will take some time. I'm reminded of the fact that pneumococcal vaccine recommendations now include younger people with asthma, which was not the case in the not terribly distant past. I'm also wondering about significantly immunocompromised patients. You know, Kelly, your patients and mine, such as transplant recipients. These groups weren't really included in the published phase three trials, and we need to get more data to assess whether they'll benefit or not. Now, I think they will, but we do still need the evidence. And finding out which vaccine to use and who is likely to get the most benefit is something we've got to figure out. Outside of older adults, there's been a lot of work done to protect other populations, specifically infants. And this is outside of the vaccine discussion directly, but you know, there's recently been FDA approval of a monoclonal antibody to protect young children, not just high-risk kids, like the older monoclonal that's been available for a number of years, but all children as a routine. It's not a vaccine, it's a form of passive immunization. The kids would still be susceptible to RSV when the monoclonal wears off, but they get exposed when they're older with larger airways and then less susceptible to bronchiolitis and severe disease. So that's very interesting. And it is, I do wonder a little bit about this because how do older adults specifically get bad respiratory infections? They usually get it from their grandkids, right? Like the biggest impact of pneumococcal vaccination to prevent disease in older adults was pediatric pneumococcal vaccination. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. There's also, this is also interesting, trials of maternal vaccination as well, where you vaccinate pregnant women, and that then provides passive immunity to newborns via placental antibody transfer. So this is under FDA review right now. And there's some looking at some signals in the literature about the impact on possibly premature birth. It's not clear if that's true or it's a statistical anomaly. So that's under FDA review right now. On the therapeutic side of things, there's investigational oral antivirals. It'll be entering phase two and hopefully phase three trials relatively soon. So, you know, it really is kind of an exciting time for advances for the prevention and hopefully the treatment of this very ubiquitous virus.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mapes, for joining us today for today's discussion. This was a really fascinating talk, and I certainly learned a lot about RSV and about the vaccines that are coming out. It was great speaking with you today. I also want to thank our audience. Thanks for listening to the Chest Pulse podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for the opportunity, Dr. Pennington. It's always just a real pleasure to be here with you and with everyone at Chest. Yeah.